This week the Sedra is Parshas Beha'aloisecha, and it begins, God says to Moshe, speak to Aaron and tell him, when you kindle the lights, El mul pinei ha-menorah, towards the face of the menorah, Yo'iru shivas ha-neros, the seven lights should shine. Towards the face of the menorah, Rashi says, since the arms are arms, then the center column is like the body, and so the middle, the seventh one is like the face, so towards the face. So previous years we've been learning Ishbitz and Me'er Shiloyach, and we've talked about the Ishbitz's question and answer. He asks, why doesn't it say towards the center of the menorah, towards the face of the menorah, the six lights should shine? I mean, the Gemara says that we learn from here that the wicks inside the bechers in which we're holding the oil, so the wicks were pointing towards the center. The three on the east were pointing towards the middle, and the three on the west were pointing towards the middle. And so, okay, but the middle one's going up anyway, straight up. So the Torah only has to say that towards the center of the menorah, the six lights should point. So in the Me'er Shiloach, as we learned many times, the Me'er Shiloach says, it's not enough to have in mind to do for God. To have in mind to do for God is that the six arms of the menorah, the lights, should point towards the center. And to say that something that I'm doing for God points at God anyway is a mistake. It's a misunderstanding. It's a fantasy. It's an illusion. Because to do something for God, even a commandment, even a mitzvah, even something you know this is the right thing to do, it's not for God unless it's really, really at the deepest depth for God. And if it's really for God, if it's emes, not just emes, but emes la'amitzoi. What's the difference between emes and emes la'amitzoi? You know, the Gemara says, Ein odam me'ez ponav lifnei bal choivoy. If I come to you and I say to you, you owe me $100. So I take you to the Beis Din and I say, this person owes me $100. He looks me straight in the face and he says, nah, never saw you before in my life. I don't owe you a penny. I never borrowed anything from you at all. And I say to the judge, trust me, believe me, he borrowed money from me. The halacha is, this person, the other person, is not obliged to me in any way and doesn't have to do anything beyond deny. If he says, no, I never borrowed anything, that's it, he walks. However, if he says, I didn't borrow $100, I borrowed $50, then he has to pay me the 50, and on the other 50, he has to swear oath by God on the Torah and put his hand on the Torah and swear an oath with God's name that he didn't owe me the other 50. Why? Why in the first case he doesn't have to pay me at all, doesn't have to swear an oath, and then he can just walk away? In the second one, where he actually admits that he owes me 50 and he pays me the 50, he has to now swear an oath on the other 50. So the Gemara says, Ein odem me'ez ponav lifnei bal choiva. A person cannot stare somebody in the face and you know, and be bald-faced liar. So a liar, however much he is, he knows he's in the wrong, so he'll admit something. So the fact that the person admits to owing 50 doesn't mean that he's not a liar, because the nature of a liar is that he'll admit something. A person can't just be a bald-faced liar and just completely deny it. So if somebody completely denies it, the Torah says he doesn't have to swear an oath. And that's the din, and that's the emes. However, sometimes somebody's a bald-faced liar. There are people who are bald. It's very rare. But what happens, you know, we're Jews. Our history is full of our encounter with barefaced liars. You know, Yasser Arafat at Camp David, he was arguing with us that there never was a Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim. Jerusalem never was a holy place for Jews. You know, Bill Clinton goes to the Encyclopedia Britannica and he takes out, you know, and he looks at Jerusalem Temple, you know, he shows it to him. He says, no, it's a mistake. It's a mistake, it's propaganda. If the Jews ever had a temple, it was somewhere in Nablus. Barefaced lie, right? There are people like these wicked people who can lie you in the face and say, no, never was. So, yet the halacha is that if you meet such a person, he walks, he denies, and then he walks. So it's not a din, it's a din emes, because that's the din, he walks. It's a true, it's the right judgment. Nevertheless, it's not emes la'amitoi. It's not true truth. It doesn't go to the deepest depth of truth. And to go to the deepest depths of truth, that already you need to have siyata d'shmaya, you need to be led by the hand from heaven to be able to put your finger on the truth that goes deeper. So the Ishbitzer says, this week's Sedra begins with the Ma'aseh Menorah. God says to Moshe, tell Aaron that when you do something for the sake of God, it's not enough that it be the right thing. Sometimes the wrong thing is what you need to do for God. And so the Ishbitzer ties the beginning of the Seder together with the end of the Seder. What's the last thing that we have in the Seder? Vatadaber Miriam va'Aaron b'Moshe. That Miriam and Aaron spoke about Moshe's wife, this Cushite woman that he'd taken, because he'd taken a Cushite woman, and they said, did God only speak to Moshe? God spoke to us as well. And the Gemara says that what's the connection with the wife and the God talking to us is that when Moshe's wife Zipporah saw Eldad and Medad and the other prophets had achieved prophecy, she said, oh, I feel sorry for their wives. You know, and Aaron and Miriam said, why? She says, well, you know how it is. Where prophets can't, you know, once your husband becomes a prophet, then he never sleeps with you again. And they were shocked because they hadn't known that Moshe was porush, that Moshe was separated that way from Tzipora. And so they said, Ha'ach rak b'Moshe? Is it only with Moshe that God spoke? Moshe, God speaks to us. We're also prophets. And we have a perfectly happy and satisfactory married life, and we have intimacy and sex. And so what's Moshe special? And so God speaks to Aaron and Miriam, and he tells them, you have no idea who Moshe is. And he says, to Moshe, I speak peh el peh, mouth to mouth. And I don't speak to him in a dream. I don't come to him in visions with metaphors and symbols. So the Ishbitzer says, Aaron and Miriam knew when the time was, when it was the appropriate moment to speak bad about Moshe. even though forever and all eternity it would be registered in the Torah, a chait, a sin, that they spoke Lashon Hara. And this is really one of the essential characteristics of a Jew, going all the way back to Avraham Avinu who said, Hineni, here I am. You know, when he was on his way to offer up Yitzhak on the altar as a burnt offering, the Medrash describes that for 3 days he was walking with Yitzhak and the Satan didn't leave him alone, not 1 minute. He says to him, old man, do you realize what you're doing? You know, and he says to him, did you speak to your counselor? Did you take your Prozac today? Did you, what are you doing? Do you realize you've gone mad? This is, you're insane. And everything that he tries to say to Avraham, just fence him off. The last thing Satan says to Avraham is, you realize that today God is telling you to kill him, but tomorrow is going to punish you. And Avraham says, that's okay with me. Can you imagine such a thing? I mean, if God says to you, I have a job for you, you'd say, sure, anything. And God says, I need you to do this really disgusting thing. Sure, I'll do this. What is it? I want you to kill. I want you to kill somebody. Kill somebody you love. Really? Yeah? Okay. So what's going to happen to me after that, God? You'll explain to everybody that you told me to do it? No. You're going to be indicted. You'll go up in front of the, you're going to be found guilty. You're going to go to prison. But this is, will you do it for me? You would say, all right. But eventually, right? Eventually, you'll tell people that I was doing it for you. No, God says, no. You're going to be a baddie to all eternity. Everybody will tell their children, you know, don't be like that person, that Meshuggah who killed his loved ones. What would you say? Maybe could you find somebody else, God? Like, right? But as a Jew, you know, look how many sins are recorded to us against us in the Torah and in history. And for what? Because Rabbeinu Shalom said, Yidalach, I need to teach the world. I need to teach the world teshuvah, how to fix things that you've done wrong. I need you to, so are you available? And we say yes, right from the beginning. And Aaron and Miriam, they say yes. Because there is no opportunity in the Torah to distinguish between, you know, we today, we think to ourselves, Moshe is on a different level than Aaron and Miriam. But at the time, in that generation, there were many people who preferred Aaron. And there was no way until this parasha comes along, and the Torah tells us, and you know, Moshe is more humble than any creature that walks on the face of the earth. And God says to Aaron and Miriam, do you realize who Moshe is? Moshe is not like, you know, B'chol Beis Yinamana, I trust Moshe everywhere. Moshe is different. Moshe is completely in another realm of prophecy that you and your sister just are not in. And then the Ishbitzer says, Aaron and Miriam get a taste. You know, if I look at somebody, you know, I watch a movie of this pilot, you know, doing this amazing stuff. Top Gun, right? This famous movie, you know, and you can watch these amazing, what these Navy pilots are doing, and it's gewalt, you know, it's very fantastic, but you know, it's not, you're not tasting it. Can you imagine actually sitting in the cockpit of the plane and feeling the G-forces and how fast your reactions are? Listen, can you imagine you're given a taste? It's not, you can't compare looking and tasting, right? You know, you look through a shop window at a cake in the baker shop and you taste it. It's not the same. Moshe Rabbeinu, even Aaron and Miriam, even as God was telling them, you know, he's different. God didn't stop there. God gave Aaron and Miriam for a moment a taste. He gave them the prophecy of Moshe. And he allowed them for a moment to be in that state of prophecy that Moshe enjoyed, and then he took it away. And in that moment, when they were in that taste of prophecy that Moshe enjoyed, they thought, oh, we've been elevated. And then immediately they realized, no, we were given a taste of Moshe, it doesn't belong to us. This, the Eshbetzin says, this is how the Seder begins. You know, to be available to God is a lot more than I'm going to obey orders. I'm going to do what it says in the book. I'm going to follow what my father taught me. I'm going to do what they said in Cheder. That's the six candles pointing towards the center. The middle one, The middle one is a whole other. There, to really be available to do the will of God, to mamish be l'shem shamayim, for the sake of heaven, to be available to fulfill the will, the desire of God, that demands, and sometimes it's going to demand a whole other leap into the abyss that I can't rationalize. So everything that happens in the Seder, and there are many small events, the consecration of the Levites, and then Pesach comes. Pesach, and there are people who say, you know, we are tamei, anachnu tameim lenefesh adam, we can't make Pesach because we're tamei. Maybe you could arrange it, and Moshe hears from God that there's going to be a Pesach Sheni, that this is the yontif, that you have a second chance. There's no such thing with Yom Kippur, you know. You didn't fast on Yom Kippur. You can't say, well, I'll do it next week. I'll do a makeup, right? Or a rain date. You know, you didn't hear the shofar, the Megillah. You know, you can't, like a week later or a day later or a minute later. If it's gone, it's not Rosh Hashanah anymore. It's no mitzvah to blow the shofar. So there's one mitzvah you get a second chance, right, which is Pesach. We've talked in the past about what it was that brings down this second chance. But then there's the misoinonim, those who complain at Moshe. And then there's those who demand, you know, that they're tired of the man and they want meat. And one after another, there's little stories in this week's parasha. And each one of them is a reflection of this first insight that the Ishbitzer gives us, that Yikar mekoved machachme sichlus me'at. You know, there's a verse in Ecclesiastes, right at the beginning of chapter 10. It says that a few little flies, a few little insects can spoil the perfume. And then it says, Yikar mekoved mechachme mekoved. More, and it's interesting that all the translators translated as grievous, yikar, more grievous than wisdom and honor is a little stupidity. And the Ishbitzer says, it's a wrong translation of the word yikar. Yikar means precious. How are you going to do here grievous? Where'd you get grievous from? He says, more precious than wisdom and honor is a little stupidity. So when God needs you to be stupid, be stupid. And don't get clever. You know, we have one of the zechiras in the Torah, one of the things that we are commanded to remember is remember what God did to Miriam on the way. And how she became a leper and she became tamei and she was outcast and, you know, she was like a dead person. And Metzora is like a dead person. Why? What did she need it for? That should be forever written into the Torah. Because she was available. She was truly available. She was the Ma'aseh Menorah. She was the face of the Menorah. So here's what the son of the Ishbitzer says. In the Medrash this week, the Medrash goes to great length to point out that God says to Moshe, don't think I need your light. I don't need your light. You're not riding the menorah because I need light. I'm perfectly happy. I don't need you to turn on the lights for me. There's a proof. One of the proofs is that in the Beis Hamikdash that Shlomo built in Yerushalayim, the windows, the embrasures were very tiny slits on the inside. And then as the brick through the width of the wall, they widened. And so it's like the light could shine out. So you didn't have to be directly perpendicular facing the Beis Hamikdash to see the lights, that you could see it through from any direction, because the slits in the bricks, in the stones, went wider and wider and wider as they came out. So normally, if you have a room and you need light inside, so you have thin slits on the outside, and inside it gets wider and wider so that the light can shine throughout the room and not just as a slit. So we see from there that God doesn't need the light, that it's in fact the light is shining out to the world. And the Medrash brings other proofs that God doesn't need light, doesn't need our light, right? And one of the proofs is that a person has in the human eye, you've got the white of the eye, and then in the middle you've got the dark, you've got the pupil. And which part of the eye do you see out of? Well, you see out of the dark part, not out of the white. So the Medrash says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God, who is all light, how much more so he doesn't need us to turn on the lights for him. There's no dark in the eye of God, so to speak. In the way that the Medrash, in the way that we understand seeing, right, is that the Chachamim understood that the light comes out of the eyes, right? That when you look at something, there's like a fluid, a spiritual fluid that comes out of your eyes that bathes the things that your eyes pointing at, and that's why you can see them with this fluid, this light that comes from your eyes. So this metaphor, now we understand that the Medrash says the light comes out of the dark of your eye. So God doesn't even have a dark of the eye. So God is all light. So Avada, of course, he doesn't need our light. So the Noiz Desh says, what is the meaning of this Medrash? Why go? What's the point? Doesn't everybody know God doesn't need light? You need to bring proofs from texts that God doesn't need light. I know God doesn't need light. And this bit with the business with the eye on the end, like that doesn't really, what doesn't compute. So he says, he takes the Ishbitz of Torah to a new level. You know what light is? He says, that is the passion that you bring to your worship of God, to your life. The arousal that you decide, oh, I want to do this. I want to do this for that person. I want to do this for God. I want to better myself. The decision that you make to change and to go in the right direction, that's light. And that's called kindling the light. And the Medrash is telling us God doesn't need it. God doesn't need our passion. He doesn't need our awakening and arousal. And he brings a proof from the Beis HaMikdash. So what's the proof from the temple? How do we know where to build a temple? How do we know? God showed us. God says, here, this is the place. And why is this place special? Because God made it special. This is the gate of heaven. When Abraham was walking for 3 days, God had to show him, this is Mount Moriah. Yeah, how did he know? And it says the Balaturim brings that Abraham could see that this place kept on receding from him. And so he said to Yishmael and Eliezer, okay, you stay here. As soon as he said to them, you stay here, and he kept walking towards it, it stopped receding. And so he had a clear message from God that this is the place. So the Noiz Desh, the Rebbe says that everything that we, when we have an arousal, when you say to yourself, oi, I want to be better, I want to do something for God, or whatever it is, where is this coming from? It's a gift. It's coming from God. So don't say you're doing it for God. You're doing God a favor, huh? Going to do God a favor, I'm going to do teshuva. You, that's not doing God a favor. It's doing yourself. You know, don't expect God to have, you know, to be giving you thanks for doing something. You're not doing it as a favor to God. And that's the metaphor of kindling the menorah, right? So, then the Medrash brings a proof that God doesn't need the light of, doesn't need human kindling light from the dark of the eye. So the Ishbitza says, where does all our arousal come from? Where does it all come from? It comes from the mistakes that we make. Ein Adam Oymed al Divrei Torah Elim Kim Nichshel Behem. Nobody really gets the Torah until you stumble. That's life. Everything good that we have, it comes from a learning process. And the learning process involves doing the wrong thing. I mean, everything from the first things that we learn as children, as babies, we learn by trial and error. That's the way human beings are constructed. That's the way God made us. So all our hirhurim of teshuvah, all our itoruta, all our awakening and arousal comes from having just done something wrong. So how could you say that God needs that arousal when it involved you doing something wrong? God doesn't need, that's not God's process. God's process isn't making mistakes and learning from mistakes. That's a human process. And, you know, the divine process of becoming is not in any way, doesn't in any way resemble this. And so the Medrash keeps on insisting, don't think that I need your light, says God. The Medrash says, Moshe didn't know how to make the menorah. He couldn't figure it out. The Medrash actually says that God described it to him in intimate detail. And he came down and he said, oops. And he went back up to heaven and said, God, can you tell me that again? And God describes the manufacture of the menorah mixture, and he says, you know, this is how you beat it out of one piece of gold. And he explains exactly what Moshe should do. Moshe comes down and you know what? I'm going to have to get further instructions. He comes back up to heaven. He says, Bon Shalom, can you tell me this one more time? And God says to him, you know what? Throw a talent of gold, throw 100 weight, right, 112 pounds of gold into the kivshan, into the furnace, blast furnace, and it will come out on its own. And then the Medrash goes on to say, Moshe couldn't figure out how to do it, so God says to him, Bezalel, he'll do it. So Moshe goes to Bezalel, and Bezalel makes it. And Moshe says to him, wow, Bezalel, Kael, you must have been Bezalel in the shadow of God when I was being instructed, because I just couldn't make it. So these two Midrashim seem to contradict one another. On the one hand, God says to Moshe, you know, all right, so you can't figure it out, I'll do it for you. Just throw the gold into the fire. It'll make itself. And in the end of the Medrash, Moshe doesn't do that. Bezalel does that. So the Rebbe says, don't think for a moment Bezalel is greater than Moshe. But you see, Moshe Rabbeinu, he's the Chochmah of every Yid. Inside every Yid, there's a Chochmah. What is a Chochmah? Chochmah is Yesh Me'ayim, it's the highest level where something comes from nothing. You see, for Moshe, the idea that you have to make a mistake in order to learn, this whole process, Tammy, he doesn't get it. And God, as much as God explains it to him, he gets it while God is explaining it to him. But when he comes down here and he tries to teach it to us, what is the process by which you make a mistake and you learn? He can't explain it. So he goes back and he says, God, can you tell me one more time? So God says, you just throw the gold in, it'll make itself. In other words, you make the mistake and the learning happens. That's, for Moshe, that's not called learning. You make the mistake and the learning happens. That's not Moshe's process. Bezalel, yeah, he does that. And the Rebbe says, can you imagine Moshe Rabbeinu is on the mountain and God explains how to make a baby. Everything from the moment that the sperm penetrates the egg and there's this like nuclear explosion that goes on inside and the unraveling of the RNA, DNA, and then the re-raveling in a new permutation, and then it splits, and then it splits again, and you got a zygote that becomes a you know, whatever the whole thing. And God explains it to Moshe, and how this thing travels down the fallopian tube and attaches itself to the wall of the cervix, the womb, and then it keeps splitting, and then, you know, it splits this way, and then you get a spine, and then it splits that way, and you get, you know, and then it unfolds, and you can Moshe, and God explains to Moshe the whole unraveling of this 9 months of miraculous transformation. Right? Moshe comes down and he tries to explain it to us, and you know, it's like, no, you're not going to get it. So what does Bezalel do? He impregnates his wife, right? It's like he makes a baby. For Moshe Rabbeinu, that's not called making a baby. Making a baby is the way that God explained it on Sinai, in every, you know, a step-by-step process. But you know something? We're all pretty ignorant. We make babies. We don't know how it's done. We just do it, right? You don't have to go to school and get a PhD to make a baby. So that kind of baby making is like God says to Moshe, you know what? Just throw the gold into the furnace, and I'll make sure it'll come out a menorah. So, you know, Moshe says to Bezalel, Bezalel, Kael, you were in the shadow of God. You know, Moshe is not in the shadow of God, right? Moshe is in the light. You know, this the idea of, you know, just blundering into things, and you know, you make a mistake and then the learning happens, and now by osmosis you know something new. That's not how Moshe's process happens. Moshe's the Chochmah. But you know, as the Ishbitz says, Yikar me Chochmah me Kovet, there's something more precious than Chochmah. And that's a little stupidity, right? Sichlus Ma'at. And this is the tension that's going on throughout the Seder. In every event, and you know, it describes how the quail came down from heaven and people started to eat it. And even though you could see your neighbor dying, you couldn't stop yourself eating. And the Ishbitzer says this is where Nachshon ben Aminadav died, and it says that there was a terrible blow. You know, it was a great loss to the Jewish people, but it doesn't say how many people were died. And the Ishbitzer says because it was just one person. It was Nachshon ben Aminadav, who was in the grip of this bulimic, whatever it was, a need to eat this meat. What is the idea of the meat? The meat is that when you want food beyond what Moshe can give you. You want something beyond what Moshe can give you. You want to taste something beyond what the manna tastes like. And that means you're into harchava, because What Moshe teaches us requires tzimtzum. One of the stories is that the people who were tamei and it came to Erev Pesach, and they come to Moshe, they say, "Anachnu tameim lenefesh odam." It's interesting that the Torah tells us that there were people who were tamei, unclean lenefesh odam, because they had touched a dead person. And they came to Moshe and Aaron by Yomahu on that day. So, and they asked, you know, they asked Hashanah. So the Gemara says, well, Moshe didn't know, so they asked Aaron. Well, how would Aaron know if Moshe doesn't know? So why does the Torah say that they came to Moshe and Aaron? So it teaches us that they came to the Beis HaMedrash. They came to the study hall where Moshe and Aaron were sitting. With the elders, and they were learning. So it was on the seventh day, and they'd been carrying a dead body. The Gemara says that they'd been carrying the bones of Yosef. And why did, so the Ishbi says, you know, why they mention Aaron is because they said, tonight we go to the mikveh, because this is the seventh day of being sprinkled with the ashes of the red heifer. Tonight we become tahor. So this afternoon, let's let the Kohanim sprinkle the blood on, you know, and do the Korban Pesach ritual for everybody in the family. But we won't go there because we're still tamei. And then we're going to go to the mikveh this afternoon. Tonight we'll become tahor. So then we're able to eat. We're able to eat the Korban Pesach. And Moshe says no. God says, no, we'll make a second Pesach for you. So the Rebbe says, what is this thing that they were carrying the bones of Yosef? So there's a Medrash also here in the Sedra, and it says that all the tribes, you know, on the 12 days that the 12 princes, we were reading last week's Sedra, the 12 princes brought their offering, one on each day, and the Shevet Ephraim with them. But the Shevet Levi, the tribe of Levi, didn't offer. And so they were sad until, you know, they were consecrated, and, you know, Aaron and so forth, and there was the elevation of the tribe of Levi, which didn't happen last week. It only happens this week in the Seder. So the Rebbe says, why does the Medrash say in all the tribes, all the 12 days, the princes brought and the tribe of Ephraim brought? What are we trying to say about the tribe of Ephraim? So he says that Ephraim brought on Shabbos, on the seventh day of the Nisim. The Nisim began on Sunday. The first of the princes offered his offering on the first day of the consecration of the temple, which was a Sunday. The seventh day was the tribe of Ephraim. So Ephraim brought a carbon on Shabbos, and it wasn't a carbon tzibur, it was a carbon of an individual. And yet, it was the right thing to do. Hoyra'as sho'o, it was a one-time psak, one-time ruling. Normally individuals can't bring, you can't offer something in the temple on Shabbos. Come back during the week. On Shabbos, it's only public offerings. Ephraim is the one for whom even Shabbos invites him in. Ephraim, because Ephraim represents Yosef. And Yosef, the whole Mishkan, is called Ohel Yosef, the tent of Yosef. Just like the Beis HaMikdash is called Beis David, the house of David, the Mishkan, the tabernacle, is called Ohel Yosef. So in that moment when Ephraim brings his carbon on Shabbos, at that moment he understands that he is the center of the menorah. He's the middle column of the menorah. And he has a touch of pride and a feeling of specialness, that really the whole, like the Medrash has a whole long list of proofs that the Mishkan, the dwelling of God amongst us, only comes about in the merit of Yosef. Beis HaMikdash is something else. But this idea that one something from the earth, something from vegetable and nature, some can all come together and sprout up to become this sacred sanctuary where God dwells. This is a metaphor of who Yosef is in Midas Yesod, the connection of heaven and earth, and the idea of fundament and the whole idea of the erection. This is the Mishkan, and this is in the marriage of Yosef. And Ephraim symbolizes this because he brings his dedication, his Chanukah, on Shabbos, in spite of the fact that it's forbidden on Shabbos. And he felt special. And you know, for a Yid of the stature of Shevet Ephraim to feel special, it's already a darkness, it's already a tumah. So he comes to Moshe, and he says, Moshe, if you can't fix me, Aaron can fix me. What is the job of Aaron? The job of Aaron is to fix everything that we've done, to make it the right thing. We come to Aaron and we tell him what we've done, and he fixes us so that the thing that we did was the right thing. That's the job of the Kohen. But, you know, Aaron says, I can't do it for you while you're still in it. And this is, you know, it's the Torah tells us that Aaron did exactly as he was told. And the Rashi brings the Gemara Melamed Shleishin Lahagid Shvuchah Shel Aaron, that Aaron did exactly, he lit the menorah exactly the way Moshe told him. So why do we need to know that? To tell us the praise of Aaron, that he didn't change what he was told to do. The Ari in Likutei Torah says, because why does the Torah need to tell us that he didn't change it? Because it really looks like he did change it. So the Ishbitzu says that it might have appeared that Aaron changes things, because he says, the Torah tells him, "B'ha'aloisecho," when you raise the lights, when you raise the idea of you make a mistake, we make mistakes, and then we learn from it, and then Aaron is supposed to come and show us how the mistake that we made was really the right thing to do. But I might have thought that Aaron did it too much, that Aaron was even able to take really averot, even the sins that we've done, the bad things that we've done, and show us how it was all part of our striving for God and for a connection. I might have thought that Aaron did it incorrectly, so therefore the Torah tells us no, because it says Helo Nereseo, that he did it in the past, that Aaron, even though he was able to show that even the worst sins that a person does were really part of his struggle for his evolution, nevertheless he only did it about sins that had already happened. You couldn't go to Aaron and say, you know, I want to do this sin, can you make it right for me? No, Aaron say no. But after we had sinned, Aaron would show us. And so here with the Shevet Ephraim, you know, we come to Aaron and we say, you know, we are in this feeling of specialness, and can you make it right? And Aaron says, no, I can't make it right. When it's past and you're done with it and you've moved on, I'll show you how to make it right. You know, we all have this dilemma. We want Aaron to come and show us that the way that we're going, even if it's the wrong way, is really the right way. We have to be willing to let go, you know, of the fact that we're carrying the bones of Yosef. And, you know, we have this pride that we're special and the whole world depends on us, and whatever it is, that everybody has their little thing that they think that makes them outstanding, that the world depends upon them. You know, we have to let go. We have to let go and become really available and, you know, not to try and taste Olam Habo, not to try and taste the world to come, not to try and taste what somebody else is, and you know, to feel, I guess, to feel genuine woe, you know, when we do something wrong, and not to, you know, keep on saying, well, you know, I'll do something wrong because obviously I'm going to learn something new that I need to know. Aaron says, I can't help you in that case. That's nothing to do with the menorah. The menorah can light you after the fact, as the seafront, as we see out of the dark of the eye. No, tomorrow night is Shavuos. I bless you and me that we should all stand there at Sinai together and we should be looking in the same direction. And so we hear the same Torah of the Rebbe, and we should have our eyes opened, and we should be kissed with the kisses on the mouth, pe'al pe'al dabe boy, that the things that we hear coming from Sinai should be those very words in the shapes as they come out of the mouth of God. I mean, have a beautiful Yontif.